Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. I apologize if you've been listening. The show maybe hasn't been as local as I would have liked. You know, we're, what, 8 days away from the first Chiefs game of the season. The Royals have a very important home series coming up, but for good reason. The biggest NFL trade in quite some time happened earlier today. If you missed it, the Cowboys, they have traded Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. They have traded Micah Parsons for 2 first-round picks. They have also traded him for Kenny Clark. Micah Parsons is now the highest paid defensive player in the National Football League. 4 years, $188 million. He got $136 million guaranteed. He got $120 million guaranteed upon signing. This is the largest non-quarterback contract in the National Football League. It started with a report that the Cowboys were interested in listening. And then it started to kind of pencil in that the Packers were one of the teams that were very, very interested in making a trade to go get Micah Parsons. A couple of things. I'm just surprised that this happened. We usually see that deadlines make deals. A deadline did make a deal this time, just not the deal that I thought. This entire time, Jerry has told us how open he was to paying Micah Parsons. He was just frustrated at the way things have played itself out behind the scenes. Now, we'll certainly get a big story and we'll get more reports and we'll get more information on how this played itself out. But I would love to know how it got so bad between the two sides. If you believe Jerry Jones, he offered Micah Parsons $200 million. To sign with the Cowboys. And obviously that did not happen. So it went from you offering him $200 million, you saying last week that you were not interested in trading Micah Parsons, that he was going to be a Cowboy this season, to now you trading him to a team in your conference. That's another part in this that just, it doesn't really add up to me. A, you traded him in the NFC. B, you traded him to a good team in the NFC. We're not talking about there's a chance that the Cowboys are going to get back the 9th overall pick in next year's NFL draft. We're talking about the Packers are usually a good team. They hover around the postseason. Maybe they make a run. Maybe they end up making a little bit of noise. But we're talking about one of the premier franchises and organizations in the National Football League. That's where you chose to trade them to? The last time that the Cowboys had a playoff game, they lost to the Green Bay Packers. So you know the kind of organization that they are. And you traded them to that team with really no hope of getting a top 10 pick. If you're going to trade a player like Micah Parsons, you need to feel that you overwhelmingly won the trade. It doesn't need to be a doubt. It doesn't need to be a conversation. Oh, yeah, we had to trade Micah Parsons, but look at what we got in return. You got a standard package. 2 first-round picks, that's the jumping off point. That's not the destination. That's not the destination at all. That's the starting conversation. So the fact that the Cowboys did this to a team that's in the NFC, a contending team in the NFC, and we don't think that they overwhelmingly won the trade is a problem. It's a big problem. That's not a good trade for the Cowboys. Now let's see how it plays itself out. Another part of this deal is, if you were going to trade Micah Parsons, you got to do that in March. For whatever reason, if you came to the conclusion that Micah Parsons cannot be on the 2025 Cowboys, he can't be on the team in June, July, and most of August. He can't be walking to practice, but he's not there because he's got a back issue. That cannot be the case. We're talking about one of the 5 best defensive players in the league, a guy who has played 4 seasons in the league and had double-digit sacks every time. Number one, how did you even let it get to this point? You should have signed him last offseason. Why did you even let it get to year 4? Then it gets to year 4. You still haven't signed an agreement. You kind of got to make a decision about what you want to do, and then you end up trading him to the Green Bay Packers. I honestly don't know if you could handle a contract dispute a contract negotiation, and a trade request worse than what we've seen the Cowboys do in the last 30 days. This was bad at every single turn, from the PR, the way that this was handled, to going around and making the media rounds the way that you have for the last couple of weeks, if you're Jerry Jones. From every single part of it was an absolute fumble on the Cowboys. An awful situation for them. Earlier, I asked Rob how he ranked the teams in the NFC. This is how I ranked it. Eagles 1, Packers 2, Lions 3, Rams 4, Commanders 5. The AFC just feels a lot more concrete than I think the NFC does. Once you get past the Philadelphia Eagles, my answer is I don't know. Maybe you still think the Lions are the best team in the NFC, not named the Philadelphia Eagles. I'll certainly listen to that. Maybe you really like Tampa Bay. I like some of the moves that they've made. Washington is a team that people have great expectations. Rob is still a believer very much in the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, that division just got a whole lot more interesting, and it was already interesting. You already could have made a case that every team in that division could have won the division. And now you throw one of the best defensive players in the league into the mix. So a wild day in the National Football League. I would say this is the biggest trade since Tyreek Hill, and the biggest, I would say, after draft trade since Khalil Mack. This is a massive, massive trade. These kind of players are not available for you to go get. If you don't draft Micah Parsons, you don't really have a chance realistically at getting that kind of player. How the Cowboys let it get to this point, how they let him walk out the door, how they didn't really take advantage and really tax the other team, all of it, I think, was a severe misplay by the Dallas Cowboys. Binkley's going to join us in studio coming up in just a bit. We're going to talk a little NFL, a little college. There's a lot of football that's going on today. Rob, we are happy. I'm happy. I don't know if you're happy. I'm happy. I'm happy that the Nebraska Cornhuskers are here. It's always cool to have these kind of college football games in your city. I was thinking this. It doesn't matter what conference Missouri is in. It also doesn't matter what other changes the Big 12 goes through. This is not the Big 12 that our parents grew up with. This is not the Big 12 that you and I grew up with. I don't know about you. I'm an old Big 12 North fan. You know, Missouri, Kansas, K-State, Iowa State, Nebraska, Colorado. Man, there was something really cool about the Big 12 North. It was something cool about all of those teams and all of those universities being within driving distance of each other. It was easy to just get in the car if you wanted to go to Ames or wanted to go to Lincoln or wanted to head over to Columbia. It was easy to go to those games. That is not what the Big 12 is. That's not really what college sports is anymore. But as I was thinking about this and Nebraska coming into town, and then you told me how many Nebraska fans are planning on making the trip and coming down to Kansas City, it just reminded me that I don't care what is going on. Kansas City will always be a Big 8 city. It will always be an old Big 12. I mean, it's still a Big 12 city. Don't get me wrong. It's not an SEC town by any means, but I don't know, man. The Big 12 is kind of weird. I mean, I know Kansas is in it and K-State's in it, and that's great. They also got Cincinnati in the league. They also got West Virginia in the league. I don't know about you. It's really tough for me to embrace that Arizona and Arizona State are in the conference and BYU is in the conference and UCF. Who are these teams? Have you ever gone somewhere like with your friends? You're kind of looking around like, yo, who are these people? That's kind of how the Big 12 feels now. You know, when we used to have the Big 12 tournament down at, or the Big 8 tournament down at Kemper, and, you know, 10, 15 years ago with the Big 12 tournament in Sprint Center, it felt like you knew everybody. Oh, there's Iowa State. Oh, there's Nebraska. Oh, like, you know, all these schools made sense. Then you were kind of like looking at to see if Baylor was going to bring anybody, you know, Texas Tech, if they were going to bring somebody. Now you're just sitting here like, what? Who are you guys? You're with where? Central Florida? How is Central Florida and Arizona State in the same conference? That doesn't even make sense. Kansas is playing BYU in a football game, and it's a conference game. Like, this is not what I envision the Big 12 being. But you can always sell us on an old school Big 8. Always. Missouri, Kansas, Kansas State, Nebraska, Iowa State. It will always matter. So that's what today is to me. I'm not a Nebraska fan in the least bit. In fact, I hope they lose so we can make fun of them tomorrow, because I kind of do like making fun of Nebraska losing when they lose. But you know what? I'm sure it's going to be a great night out there. They've got one of the young star quarterbacks in college football. It's a beautiful night. It's an iconic stadium. They're bringing a lot of people to come down and celebrate the start of college football season. I'm sure it's going to be a great night. But I just wanted to remind you guys that deep down, at our core, doesn't matter what school you cheer for in the area, we always will love the Big 8. We are always going to have a love for the old Big 12 North, because college sports, it was just more fun when that was the league, when that was what we were a part of.
We have talked about it ad nauseum on this show, and we will continue to. Regionality is what makes college sports fun. I know as a Missouri fan, you don't like Arkansas. I get it. But what's the game on your schedule this year that you're like, I cannot afford as a fan to lose that one? That one will hurt me the most. It's not Arkansas. It's not South Carolina. It's not Oklahoma. It's Kansas. As a Kansas fan, I have no feeling toward, oh man, West Virginia is coming to town on September 20th. That's a big one. I don't care. Oh, they got a tough road game at UCF on the 4th. I don't care. They play K-State, they play Iowa State, they play Missouri this year. That's what matters. If you're a Nebraska fan, you're out at Arrowhead tailgating right now, and you're listening to the show, I know that you guys don't like Iowa. I get it. You don't like Iowa. But you know what you probably hate more than Iowa? Oklahoma. You probably really hate Colorado a lot more than you hate Illinois. I'm just guessing. Regionality is what makes college sports great, and if you're out at Arrowhead tonight, or you're in the area, or you're watching the game on ESPN, you will see a full stadium or a near full stadium, because Nebraska fans and proximity matters, and games in Kansas City are a bigger deal to Nebraska fans. There'll be more Nebraska fans at this game than Nebraska fans that go to see them play Rutgers or Washington or whatever have you. Regionality is the king in college sports, and it's sad. Very sad that conference realignment killed that, because Missouri fans, you can say you care about the SEC, but when you guys are playing Vanderbilt, you don't feel the same way as when you're playing Iowa State or Oklahoma. You just don't. And Kansas and Kansas State fans, I know you feel the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we just, I don't know, maybe didn't factor in, just didn't think about, and this is just not how people discuss conferences anymore. When you are a part of a conference, you are a part of a community. If you think about the way that people talk about old Big East basketball, they created a community. It is a group of schools that are all regionally tied, that play each other, that there is a connection when that happens. The old Big Eight, the Big 12 North, it was a community. And we don't think about it in that way, but that's really what it is. Right now, the Big 12 is not a community. Not even close to a community. It's just a random collection of teams from around the country. And I get why the Big 12 had to operate and do business that way. I'm not putting down the way that the Big 12 had to survive. You could have been the Pac-12 that they don't have anything. You don't have a random collection of teams. You don't have a community. You ain't got nothing if you're the Pac-12. But college football, college athletics in general, why it matters so much is it's really important to communities. And it connects people. And they have just chosen the commerce in every single turn. They have turned over college athletics to ESPN, Fox, and CBS and just let them do whatever they want with it. The NFL, they still keep that. You don't think of a division in the NFL as a community, but it is. You love going on those trips. You love now taking the Vegas trip every year, and you call it Arrowhead West, and you go out there and take it over. Think about all the matchups that they've had with the Broncos over the years. Like, that stuff really matters. It's part of the storytelling and why we like sports so much. That is not the interest of college athletics really at any point anymore. Very happy to look to my right and see Jay Binkley joining us in studio. Binkley, there is a million things that I want to talk to you about. Let's just start
with this.
Football day. Absolutely. Let's just start with this. What do you make of the Micah Parsons trade?
I was shocked a little bit, because usually you think these things drag out and they eventually go the Cowboys' way. You often have to wait till the first of the season, like Dak and CeeDee Lamb. So I was surprised that it actually got to the point of contention, whether they had a handshake agreement for $40 million, and he didn't want that because he wanted more. Clearly, he got more.
Not even close. He got 47.
And Jerry needs to know that these guys use their agents. I mean, that's what these agents are hired for, is to do that. But I was a little bit surprised it went to the Packers. I was surprised at the draft compensation, because five of the last 6 years, the Packers have drafted in the 20s. And Micah Parsons wasn't going to make them better. I mean, their odds for Super Bowl went straight up on FanDuel, and the Cowboys went down, of course. But Ira Myrov had said that five of the last 6 years, and he's right, because the Packers are always picking there in the 20s and towards the end. But it's going to be a good team this year. They're going to be picking at the bottom of the 20s, too. So sometimes you look at Laremy Tunsil's deal, and it wasn't first-round picks involved in that. When you look at all the draft compensation, it might have been more. Even Jay Cutler, going back to, you know, those kind of trades, very similar compensation levels and draft picks that the Cowboys receive.
To me, if you were going to trade Micah Parsons, like, it needs to be an overwhelming feeling that you won the trade and you really hit Green Bay over the head. Like, you have one of the most valuable commodities in the National Football League. He's not a quarterback, so obviously there's, you know, 10, 12 players that you'd rather have other than Micah Parsons. But in his prime, 26-year-old pass rusher who has played in 63 games and has 58 sacks, that's about as valuable of a commodity that you could have in the National Football League.
He's a game changer. He's a game changer.
You got to really feel like you fleeced Green Bay. Like, well, that's how you got to feel. And to me, only getting two first-round picks, yeah, that's the starting point. That's not the end. I need two first-round picks, a 2 and a 5, if we're trading Micah Parsons.
And losing Kenny Clark was big. But think about this, though. They have two players now taking over $100 million slap of that cap. I know the salary cap went up to $279 million this year, but between Jordan Love and Micah Parsons, that's over $100 million that they're paying per year for just two players. So it's all your eggs in one basket with the Green Bay Packers, because with Micah and Jordan Love, because Jordan Love just got $55 million. So you had that and then the $47 million of Micah Parsons. That's a lot of money to be spending on two players.
I'm just a little surprised that the Patriots weren't more involved in this conversation. It has felt like a Patriots kind of move. Quarterback on a rookie deal, AFC team, you have the available cap space. You mentioned Vrabel, the defensive-minded head coach. If you had told me at the beginning of the day Micah Parsons is getting traded, I would have said, oh, yeah, he's going to the Patriots.
You know who should have done it, but they wouldn't do it because they're cheap and they're very bad at drafting and doing everything else, was the Bengals. They're the last team in the NFL to sign their first-round pick the last 2 years. And they've not been very good with Shamar Stewart, the Demaryius Mims the year before. It wouldn't hurt the Bengals to give up first-round picks. Then they wouldn't have to worry about signing him and taking Micah Parsons, putting him on the opposite side of Trey Hendrickson. Can you imagine improving that defense to go along with that offense had the Bengals been the one to make this move instead of the Packers?
I mean, they barely want to pay their own players.
Now they're interested
in paying other teams' players.
They're way too cheap to do this. But it gets them off the hook from getting first-round picks because they clearly don't like signing them.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Jay Binkley. I wrote down how I would rank the NFC. Eagles 1, Packers 2, Lions 3, Rams 4, Commanders 5. How do you see the NFC?
I like the Commanders a lot, just like last year when I told you to look out for the Commanders. So I would put the Commanders behind the Eagles. I like the Eagles, then the Commanders, then the Packers, and then I'd go Lions, and I'd go Buccaneers there at 5. They've won the NFC South for 4 straight years. I like with Evans there and Godwin, I like the drafting of Mecca Egbuka, and I like the way Mayfield's playing. So, and, you know, winning their division 4 straight years, I think the Bucs are on the sum. They lost last year in the divisional round, so the Bucs would be my 5th team.
I just, now that I'm really, really thinking about this, just what, there's a lot of things that stun me about this. Why would you trade Micah Parsons to a team that's in contention? Why would you trade him to a team that's in contention in the NFC that's on your schedule in the first month of the season? Like, they play each other week 4 of the NFL season. Why did you not get more compensation from Green Bay that you ended up? What other teams were involved in the Micah Parsons trade? Like, would it have been better for you to take two first-round picks from the Chargers than take them from the Packers? So, like, there's just so many things, but I think you and I are at least on this same page. I can't believe Jerry let it get this bad with a player so important. Like, for the most part, and we can all say what we want about Jerry Jones, they usually don't do this. They always figure it out. I'm watching the documentary. Whenever Emmitt Smith was unhappy, they figured out a contract with Emmitt Smith. When Dez Bryant was unhappy, they figured it out. When Dak, DeMarcus Lawrence, we can go up and down the list. They usually don't just trade superstar players. They're not trading their best player a week before the start of the season. The fact that they let it get this bad is very, very telling.
It's very telling, especially with Jerry Jones, because this is ego. And he's being looked upon by fans in the NFL like, man, this is a bad trade. You know, this is Dallas trading Luke all over again. I mean, Jerry Jones now looks bad because of this trade. Usually he does things to look good. He always wants to look good, right? America's team with his Dallas Cowboys. And this makes him look bad, this whole deal. He was their best player. I know CeeDee Lamb and Dak and all that there. Micah Parsons is their best player. This guy is elite at what he does. And usually, you know, top 15 picks are the guys that get to the quarterback. When you look at the end of the year, the top 20 sackers, it's the 1 through 15 type of guys. That is the toughest position in football to replace besides the quarterback, is elite edge rushers like Micah Parsons. So, yeah, it was a huge mistake. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes is probably celebrating too. Didn't have to face him on Thanksgiving.
For sure.
We're not going to be sitting there at 3 o'clock watching the Cowboys and the Chiefs and thinking, oh, man, they got blocked Micah Parsons, Juwan Taylor, you know, sitting there looking at that, and Josh Simmons and these guys going, well, we don't have to worry about Micah Parsons anymore now, do we?
Yeah, that Cowboys, they have 4-8 heading into that game written all over it.
It's Turkey Day special.
100%. I do want to get to college football coming up here in just a bit. We were talking about the story, so I want to get your opinion on it. On average, studies say that men spend $15,000 more a year when you're in a relationship. You got to factor in, like, you know, all of the things, you know, an extra vacation, an extra all of these things.
Yeah.
Now you're paying for another person. Are you somebody that goes Dutch whenever you go on dates?
Not usually. Don't usually go Dutch. But I understand the expense of it all. And then when you throw kids in the equation, I'm past that point, because they get really expensive as they keep getting older. But when they're in school and they want to go to private school or whatever, I mean, it's a big expense. But I 100% agree with that. But no, I typically don't do Dutch. Do you do that?
No, I don't. I was just curious.
I usually take that check. You know, hey, you know, I'll pay for it. If I invited somebody out, you know, I pay for it. I mean, it's the way you do things if you're invited. Just like if your neighbor gives you football tickets, right? You just give them to him, man. You don't sit there and give them to him and say, oh, that's actually 150, my friend, or 200. No, I ask you if you want tickets. I mean, you take them. So if you ask someone dinner, you pay for it.
Coming up on the other side, we'll transition. We'll talk a little college football. We'll also get your thoughts on the 53-man roster for the Kansas City Chiefs. We got Bank in studio talking football. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, so much to get into. We got Binkley in studio. Let's talk a little Chiefs 53-man roster. We'll also talk a little college football here as well. All right, let's start with the 53-man roster. I would say two things surprised me. The first thing that surprised me is I thought they would be a little bit more active in trying to get another running back.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're happy with their running back room. They kept Elijah Mitchell. They got Clyde Edwards-Helaire from the practice squad. Like, this is the unit, at least for the time being. The other thing that surprised me is I didn't think that Mike Pinnell was on the roster bubble. Just he's been a part of this team. He has a role on this team. He was running with the ones not that long ago. Now, it sounds to me like they're doing some funny money with the roster math. If they need him, they'll bring him back. He's shown that he can kind of be ready to go. So I do think that Mike Pinnell will play for the Chiefs at some point this season. But I'm a little bit surprised that his spot wasn't one that was guaranteed.
I think when Derek Nottie came to the Chiefs, you know, someone like a play that nose tackle, that one technique that made the difference for Mike Pinnell. I think they looked at that younger guy in Derek Nottie that's been here. Not that Mike Pinnell hasn't been here either, but I think that's kind of where it went. But Robert Tonyan, you know, a lot of people were upset with that. That was the Chiefs' leading receiver through the preseason. But now he's on the 53. He was elevated up to it today. So it was a numbers game with guys like Tonyan that got moved to 53. I am surprised that Pinnell wasn't at least still part of the practice squad or something like that, because now anybody can obviously grab him because he's not getting those checks, because practice squad checks are pretty nice in the NFL.
Right now we're talking to Binkley, just going through some of the top stories for the team.
The receivers do concern me, though. That does concern me from the 53.
Let's talk about it. I have kind of put the responsibility on Hollywood Brown during this period.
Yeah.
We've never seen what a healthy Hollywood Brown looks like in this offense. He played two regular seasons. He played five games last year.
He's missed 24 games his last 3 years. Yeah, I get it. He missed 15 last year. Okay. Well, he missed 9 before that the last couple of years. He just doesn't play a full season. Even a couple years ago when he played 16 and 17, he still had to miss their like week 10 game in Arizona. So, yeah, on paper, you look at it and say, well, Hollywood Brown's going to be back and he's going to be fine. Well, you can't always count on that either. I mean, you can't count on that. This is a guy that was hurt on the first his first catch in preseason last year. You can't catch on. Jalen Royals, you know, it's hit or miss whether you believe, you know, some reports say, well, he's going to be on IR. Some say he'll be okay.
I don't think he's playing week one.
I don't think he is either. And this could be an IR move because, you know, it's that knee tendonitis, something like that. And keep in mind, he did miss 5 games last year with Utah State. Now, he was healthy enough for the combine, was healthy enough to participate in the Senior Bowl last year. But yeah, these things kind of concern you going forward because you look on paper and you think, all right, you're going in the game one with Rashee Rice. You may not have Jalen Royals. Yeah, you can have Juju. Okay, you're going to have Xavier Worthy, which I'm expecting a better year, even better than Xavier Worthy last year. And Xavier Worthy last year was a pretty good receiver down towards the end of the schedule last year. It was great, actually, so I'm expecting better things from him. So it's going to be different when you're losing a Rice and then you don't have your first-round pick because that was going to be one of the guys, and this is why I wanted a later suspension for Rice, not initially with these games, because Royals would be acclimated more with the offense, be ready to roll and step in, you know, for Rashee Rice and what he did. And of course, I've always been advocating for Keenan Allen as well. I know your thoughts on Keenan. But I was for it because he did have 770 yards last year. That would have finished second in the Chiefs, only behind Kelsey. So, yeah, he is older, but he's a great slot receiver. That is what Rice played half on the outside, half on the slot. And I get it, man. But it's a case of emergency, break glass. It wasn't going to cost you a ton for 1 year. Does he want to go to a spot where he could play all year? Because clearly he's going to play more for the Chargers. But with the Chiefs receiver situation, maybe he'd play a lot more than he thinks he would.
Yeah, I just was kind of looking at it where, you know, with Xavier Worthy, I think we at least know what the floor is for Worthy. I don't know what the ceiling is with Worthy. Last year, I thought he developed very well in the second half of the season. In the first half of the season, the timing was just a little bit off. I think his football IQ of where the sticks were and where the sidelines were, like, maybe he ends up getting less targets this year, but ends up being more impactful because he can hit a couple of those home runs down the field where they just couldn't really do it last year. I kind of have an idea of what Tyquan Thornton could be in this offense. I think best case scenario is he's DeMarcus Robinson. He's a guy that could have 460 yards on 65 targets this year, and I think you're more than happy if that's what you turn him into. There's such a range to me of what Hollywood Brown can be. You're right. Hollywood Brown could play in 5 games this year and then he's gone. Hollywood Brown could play in 14 games and have 900 yards receiving this year. Like, I genuinely have no clue of what he can be. And that's why I think he's the biggest X factor on the team, period. Maybe you could argue the offensive line, the left tackle, or the left guard. But if you were asking me what's the widest variance for a player that we can kind of measure their success, I think it's Hollywood Brown.
And I like Tyquan a lot. He was the 50th overall selection a couple years ago in the draft in the second round. So it's not like a 6th or 7th round undrafted guy. He just had to work on his route tree, and clearly he's done that in Kansas City. He is a guy that can take the top off the defense. It is a guy that backed the safeties up and free out more of the room for the running game and the tight ends, because I think the Chiefs were in a lot of 12 and 13 personnel with 2 and 3 tight ends until Rice is back. But it is a guy that can back that defense up, so I do like that. And Xavier Worthy, he's more than a one-trick pony. He's more than just a speed guy. I think that didn't do him any favors when he runs a 4-2-1, because everybody's like, oh, the Chiefs just want the fastest guy in the draft. Well, he also led Texas in yards and receptions for 3 straight years. In 2 of those 3 years, he led him in touchdowns and finished 2nd that other year. So Xavier Worthy can play football, and I really like what he can do.
Is there anything to talk about with the defense? And I only ask that because the Chiefs' offense, there's question marks, right? There's a question mark at left tackle. There's a question mark at left guard. We're mentioning Hollywood Brown. You might feel good about them, but you can't say they're a period or an exclamation point. They're question marks heading into the season.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's any question mark right now on the defense? Their defense is healthy. They return just about everybody. They got the best defensive coordinator in the National Football League. Like, to me, we're talking about one of the 5 best units in the NFL, a unit that I expect them to excel from the word go this year. I don't have many questions, concerns, hesitations. I don't feel anything negative about the defense.
No, I don't. I really like some of the draft picks, like Noel Williams on defense there. You know, he'll be playing some corner here and there with the Chiefs. I really like him and Ashton Gelati. I love his motor and what he can do. And I love the way he can pressure the quarterback. The 60 pressures last year in college, 58 the year before, did lead college football in that. But he's got one of these motors, so I'm excited to see him play. But no, I don't have a lot of question marks on this defense. I mean, they want to shore up a little bit about their – because they've got guys that can definitely get to the quarterback from the defensive line. But stepping the run, it's one reason they brought back Derek Nnadi.
Now I'm going to ask you to look inside a crystal ball for just a little bit. This might be tough. But let's say the Chiefs, for whatever reason – don't win the division. Who wins the division?
I'd say Denver. Denver was right there with the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium. Listen, it took that block kick, right? And, you know, forget about what happened at the end of the year.
Yeah,
the Chiefs back, it doesn't count. But they were really competitive when the Chiefs were good. I mean, that was a team that went wire to wire with the Chiefs down to a block kick at the end. So I think they're ahead of the game. I think Sean Payton's a better coach. The second best coach in the division right now. I don't think Harbaugh's, you know, too far behind. Pete Carroll's a great head coach too. You know, he's won at the college level. He's won at the pro level. We'll see what he can do. But the coaches in this division are great. But the Chiefs did win this division by four games last year. But I think Denver, roster-wise, and I look at the draft, and I see these running backs going in the first round, like the Chargers with Hampton and Genty with the Raiders. Like, Denver was the only team to try to draft to stop the team that's been winning the division nine straight years. They drafted Jahdae Barron, the cornerback out of Texas. You put him on the other side of Sertan. I mean, that's the way you slow down Mahomes. It's with cornerbacks. It's with edge rushers. It's not drafting running backs. So I don't know what the Chargers are doing and what the Raiders are doing. But Denver, I thought, drafted better.
Coming up on the other side, we'll talk a little college football. Tonight, we have Nebraska. Missouri also plays later today as we try to learn more about their quarterback situation. And we have an exciting week one in college football. We'll get Bink's thoughts on it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, there's so much to get your thoughts on. We got Jay Binkley joining us in studio. All right, Bink, let's start with this. Nebraska is in town today. I like this Nebraska team. The fact that they won seven games and made a bowl game last year with a true freshman quarterback is a really, really impressive thing. Like, you cannot undersell that. Now, you're expecting him to grow. You're expecting him to develop. Last year, he threw 13 touchdown passes, 11 interceptions. You're expecting to get more production from him this season. I'm not ready to say that Nebraska is a team that has a chance to make the college football playoff, but I think they could be an 8 or 9 win team. I'm expecting a better version of the Cornhuskers than we got last year. I also really like their head coach.
Yeah, Matt Rhule has made a difference there. He's won everywhere he's gone. I mean, you expect Matt Rhule, except for Carolina. Clearly, the NFL didn't work out for him, but college football is his game. He's got the podcast out now. He's trying to relate to fans better and everything else. I like the direction that he's going and the Cornhuskers. What a fan base they have. I mean, you know, a couple hours out, back at noon or something, I-29 was packed with, you know, Nebraska fans coming down the highway. I mean, they've just been here. They're going to have a ton of fans. It's going to sell out Arrowhead Stadium, of course, and it's a good look for Arrowhead. I love these kickoff classic type games at Arrowhead. I mean, we've seen Missouri and Kansas play. You've seen Pittsburgh State play Northwest Missouri State and all that. But, you know, having this kickoff classic type games, I think, is important for Arrowhead. I still remember that 2002 game, Florida State and Iowa State. You know, Bobby Bowden and company played at Arrowhead Stadium. And that was fun. That was the end of the Eddie Robinson Classic. But 2002 was here at Arrowhead Stadium. And, you know, we're not getting a bowl game here, but these kickoff classic, we continue to have these big-time college football matchups. Even though you might, you know, sneer at Nebraska versus Cincinnati as big-time college football, but for those fans coming down for Nebraska, this is.
Let's go big picture for the college football season. I guess I have a two-part question. Who do you think is this year's Tennessee? A good team from a power conference that we don't think can win the national championship, but is firmly a playoff team. I think that team's going to be Illinois this year. I think it's going to be very clear at the end of the season that Illinois is a college football playoff team. Who do you think?
Well, I like Illinois too. You look back 2022, they led college football in points against them, and defense was so good. I expected to be good against this year. But Illinois is one of those teams. And I would also throw in the factor of South Carolina. South Carolina almost made the playoffs last year. Lenore Sellers, I think, is a top four quarterback in college football. And again, this team came down to the end. Are they going to make the playoffs or not? They played everybody extremely close down the stretch. And South Carolina could be one of those teams, I think, surprises some people. But I'm with you on Illinois.
Who do you think could be the Indiana SMU? You know, I'm guessing if I go through a lot of the college football prognosticators, they're not picking a team like that to make the college football playoff. But one of the joys of the season is a team just overperforms. A team's much better than you think they could be. Arizona State was that team. I just mentioned Indiana and SMU. Who do you think could be that kind of sleeper team that in November we're talking about?
Well, it's funny because you go back and look at the history, 19 of the last 21 years, a team in the top 10 to begin the season finishes out of the rankings completely.
Who's that team you think this year? Who could that be?
Who in the top 10 will finish completely out of it? Mm. I actually don't think it happens this year. I like this. Florida State was kind of iffy. If they were 10 last year, they were really iffy. They fell down, of course, pretty hard last year. But I like all these teams. Maybe Miami would be that team that would be exposed a little bit down the stretch. So Miami, I still think they'll end up ranked, falling completely out of the rankings. I don't see it. But as far as just total surprise team, you know, maybe Arizona State without, you know, Cam Skedaboo can be that team with Sam Levitt at quarterback, could be that team that still shows some. This is a team that was picked last year in the Big 12. They ended up, you know, winning it and going to the college football playoffs. Maybe they can be that team.
Right now, we're talking to Jay Binkley. We got a handful of really big games this weekend. I'll get you out of here with your thoughts on this. The first one, we got Texas, Ohio State. That's the biggest game this weekend in the sport. It feels like the debut of Arch Manning, even though we've seen him play. Julian Sain, the very talented quarterback from Ohio State. Who do you like in that matchup?
I like Texas and Arch Manning. I am believing him in this game. And, of course, it's on the road. It's a tough game. But, you know, Julian Sain's first start, the guy that was at Alabama transferred before the season even began, transferred to Ohio State. So we were able to sit there, see him, you know, go throughout the playoffs. Cardinal Tate, a wide receiver. They have great wide receivers coming in the future. But I think Ohio State may take a step back this year. I think this is Texas year. But keep in mind, Arch Manning could not beat out Quinn Ewers, who goes in the seventh round to the Miami Dolphins. But I do believe in Texas in this game. That'd be my 1A game this weekend.
We got LSU and Clemson.
That's my favorite.
Number one, LSU, Brian Kelly, beginning of the season. They typically get off to really slow starts.
They haven't won, CDOT, since 2019, the first game. They have lost every game since 2019 to start the season. That's crazy.
So he gets off to slow starts. You're now talking about on the road at Death Valley. Kind of hard to pick LSU to win this game. I think LSU is a better team than Clemson is. It's just difficult to pick LSU to win this game week one.
They have three wide receivers that could be drafted in this year's draft. The quarterbacks, I think you're talking about, you know, three of the top five quarterbacks going this weekend, and Arch Manning clearly from Texas. But I love Cade Klubnik for Clemson. And Garrett Nussmeier of LSU, that was a big shock and a surprise that, you know, he did end up going back to LSU because he was talking about going through the draft and there's all the decisions whether he's going to go back or not. But Garrett Nussmeier is definitely one of the top quarterbacks in college football. That is just going to be a classic quarterback matchup. And I think Clemson gets back to the playoffs again this year. I think Clemson can be one of those teams that makes some damage. Dabo Swinney's using the transfer portal. He didn't use it last year. It was the only non-service academy not to use the transfer portal, but he's believing in it now and bringing in the guys. But I definitely like the quarterback matchup in that one.
What's a game outside of those top two that you're really looking forward to this weekend? Those are the two gems. Those are the two marquee games. There's a lot of really good games this week.
Syracuse, Tennessee. See, without Nico.
I'm surprised you were going to say it. I thought you were going to go Notre Dame, Miami.
Well, I
thought you were going to go TCU, North Carolina.
You said off the beaten path.
Okay, my bad. I didn't know.
Syracuse, Tennessee.
You threw a curveball there. I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Yeah, just off the beaten path. I mean, clearly, yeah, Notre Dame, Miami.
I like Syracuse's head coach. I'm a fan. I like their head coach.
We'll see what Tennessee's like without Nico.
Yeah, a 7-win football team is what I'm guessing. Binkley, man, I appreciate you, man. I'm really happy to talk football with him. Happy the football is back. Go Nebraska? Certainly go Tigers. I mean, come on now, Rob. Rob, I want to hear you say go Tigers, man. Come on now. You got it in you.
I really hope Sam Hoare wins the job tonight, man. It's a real true competition. That's what I'm hoping for.
I'll catch you guys tomorrow. It's The Drive.